What if I told you that there was a secret organization promoting antiquated political ideologies that seek to institute a nation governed by Christians based on their personal understanding of biblical law? And this evil cabal of zealots are promoting superstitious and fear-based dogma that is intended to culminate into the Revelation-style apocalypse of mankind. Real wrath of God stuff. We'll get to that in a minute. Welcome to the Right to Reason podcast. Today, we're going to be talking to the delightful ladies of Atheist on Air Beyond the Trailer Park. They're going to explain the creepy world of dominionism, Islam, and Vice President Mike Pence. I know that last one scared you a little bit. Let's get started.
It's the Right to Reason podcast.
This episode of the Right to Reason podcast is brought to you by our patrons and contributors like me. We have all recognized the value of the unrestrained marketplace of ideas and have decided to make a difference. You can make a difference too. Contribute at patreon.com/right and learn more about your right to reason at therighttoreason.com. Your activism is appreciated.
And we are here with all the ladies of Atheist on Air Beyond the Trailer Park, Beth Hambridge, Morgan Stringer, and Deborah McTaggart. Thanks for being here, ladies.
Hey, good to be here again.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, yeah. Definitely.
So I wanted to ask you about the title itself, Beyond the Trailer Park, because that title kind of gives me the impression that, like, you guys were in the trailer park and then you, like, you got out like a good country song.
Kind of, yes. Well,
or like the recording takes, like, I'm the listener, I'm in a trailer park and I'm listening, but you're taking me beyond audibly.
You could be. Well, people may not know, but we are a spinoff of the original Atheist on Air, which sadly is no longer with us. But that was hosted by Cash and Professor Steven. And Professor Steven will still pop on our show when he has time, which sadly isn't very often, but whenever he can. Cash had a character on Atheist on Air that was a sort of backwoods southern, he called it Bapticostal preacher, who lived in pasteurized or whatever you want to call it in a trailer park. And it was the Catfish Creek Trailer Park. And he would do a piece every show where it was the sort of church news from Catfish Creek Trailer Park with Pastor Roy. And he
Pastor Roy.
Pastor Leroy. And he would get on and talk about all the various denizens of the Catfish Creek Trailer Park, like Diamond, who used to be an exotic dancer but then opened a massage parlor, and they definitely don't give happy endings, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, that kind of stuff. And so when we did our spinoff, we kind of wanted to pay homage to that. And so we went with Beyond the Trailer Park because we couldn't do Pastor Roy justice at all, and we wouldn't try, but we wanted to pay homage to it anyway.
Also, it fits with our regions, like, you know, Beth's in Kentucky, I'm in Mississippi, you know.
Yeah, it's like
and
a country thing.
I come from a long line of Canadian rednecks.
Yeah. The topics that you guys typically get into, I remember when I was a guest on your show, you guys kind of blew my mind about the topic of, like, I'm going to screw it up, so help me out. But it's kind of like there's this cabal of evangelical leaders running things and trying to, like, we all know that there's, like, a push for, you know, the religious right. Like, everybody knows about that. But you guys kind of brought up the idea that this is more like a conspiracy thing.
The dominionism.
Yeah. It's not really a conspiracy in the sense that there's, like, no,
we're not,
evidence of it. There
we're
is,
not. Yeah, there's, like, actual documents that you can go and look at where people are outlining what the plan is and how they want to go about it. And
I was literally taught this in school. Like, I went to an evangelical boarding school, and we were literally taught the seven mountains. These are our spheres of influence. These are the mountains we're trying to take over. You know, it was like arts and entertainment, culture, you know, almost sounded like kind of like Trivial Pursuit pieces. But, you know, in the government and Hollywood, things like that. And so,
Hollywood.
It was like the arts and culture and stuff. Yeah.
They got this whole group together. Like, they're all sitting around in this room and they're like, all right, how are we taking down the entertainment business? And one guy's like, he just put the cigar out and he's like, somebody get me Kirk Cameron.
Are you saying that jokingly, Robert? That's exactly what they're doing.
Look at the spate of movies like God's Not Dead 1, 2, 3. I think are they on 4 now? The Noah movie. All of these like religiously themed movies that are getting bigger budgets than they ever had before because they're trying to push this as mainstream entertainment.
Well, it comes to their Christian worldview thing. It's like this whole, because this is what literally what the class was that I was taught in high school was Christian worldview. Mm-hmm. And it was like basically like, here's why all the other religions are wrong. Here's why atheism is wrong. Here's why humanism and feminism and, you know, socialism and all that is wrong. It was literally like right-wing propaganda class. As me, Beth and I particularly have discussed, you know, people think that we're crazy. And I'm like, no, I literally have a binder. It's literally, I have a textbook of stuff. Like, what, you think I just typed up a textbook for myself to, like, make shit up? And people are like, no, you're being paranoid. And I'm like, no, there are these right-wing groups out there. I mean, if you look at it, they're also connected to, like, the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation and things like that. And that's who's picking our Supreme Court justices. That's who's picking our federal judges.
Turning Point.
Yeah, Turning Point USA. It's all about influencing the culture because they teach in the schools that are in these evangelical schools, essentially. Atheists basically are trying, or in all other religions, are trying to use culture, arts, and media to sort of influence people to have their worldview. And in a way, I guess it kind of can make sense because you're going to have like some of your worldview and the art and the content that you create. And then, yes, there are people that do try to have like persuasive messages, like here's why we should care about the environment or, you know, things of that nature. But
horrible stuff like that.
Yeah, stuff like that. But they take it to like, okay, that, but let's do this for our right-wing message.
One thing that should be noted is there are also Democratic theocrats and Dominionists, but not many. And one prominent figure, although I don't think she's as active as before, is Hillary Clinton. She was part of the C Street and the family. Now, the problem with Dominionism or Dominionist theology or Reconstructionism, Seven Mountains Mandate, is they really fall under an umbrella. So there's, like, you have the NAR, the New Apostolic Reformation, you have Revisionists, you have Reconstructionists, you have, you know, the theocratic movement. So it's very broad. But when you have people who have written books, who have stated this is what we want to do, this is how we are going to do it, and implement that, and one of the biggest, for lack of a better word, pieces of evidence is the Wedge document. Which, if you followed the Dover v. Kitzmiller case on evolution and creationism in Pennsylvania schools in Dover, Pennsylvania, the Wedge document became very prominent in that trial. It outlines not only for the creation-evolution debate, but also how these are ultra, and I mean ultra right-wing, theocratic members of Congress and our government, people like David Barton. He's the worst. He's a revisionist. Then you have people like Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachmann, Rick Perry, okay?
Dinesh D'Souza.
Most of your, quote, Republican side of the aisle fall under the Dominionist or the theocratic movement.
You know who really creeps me out, though, is that Mike Pence. Because, you know, I was talking to Aaron Ron. I'm like, hey, if we can get the House and we can get the Senate, maybe we can impeach Trump and get rid of him.
We do not want to impeach Trump.
No,
Pence is very intelligent.
And he knows how to work the system. Trump is an idiot.
Yeah. Trump is going to cause us a lot of trouble. Mike Pence is going to cause us a world of hurt. In other words, I will be lucky if I am a free hombre if he were to become president, because Mike Pence believes in conversion therapy. He is a theocrat through and through. I don't think he's a dominionist per se, and dominionism is a little bit different than a theocrat. Dominionists believe that they have dominion over all the earth based on Genesis 1:26-28. Where God, quote, allegedly gave dominion to man over all of the earth. Now, there's branches of it.
A lot of people don't realize, like, they're not like, oh, yes, because if you go to these people who I would consider even sort of instrumental in the dominion movement, I would say that a lot of them wouldn't be like, oh, yes, I know about the seven mountains and I can name them all. And, you know, I know about, you know, what spheres of culture we're trying to influence, you know, but it's just more of like, I wouldn't say they're pawns, but in a way they are. But it's, there's different aspects of dominionism, different branches for sure.
I would say they've approached it where people who are involved don't necessarily need to know what all the other parts are doing. Exactly. It's just this person is really keen on, say, influencing the entertainment field. This person is really keen on influencing, say, media. And so on. This person wants to screw up all the textbooks they can get their hands on. So they don't necessarily need to know about the other aspects. They just know that this is what I feel like I need to do, and this is what I think is right for Jesus, and go from there. So they're gonna go, they're going to go to, you know, go to Texas and be like, I'm going to erase slavery from all the textbooks and tell people that Moses, what is it, Moses wrote the Bible or some shit?
Moses wrote the Father.
That's right. Yeah. Moses showed up to sign the Constitution and all that stupid shit.
Like, well, see, what's really...
imparted the Delaware.
Yeah. What's really important to realize with dominionism as a whole is that right now there's a loose alliance, and it's becoming looser, between the Mormon Church, the Catholic Church, and evangelical Christians. Now, prior to Mitt Romney running, and this is an example I use all the time, there might be some more fresher ones, but prior to him running for president against Barack Obama, he was listed on Billy Graham, the Billy Graham, not Franklin, his son, but on Billy Graham's website as Mormonism being a cult. The day he won the nomination for the Republican Party, guess what disappeared off of his website?
The cult part?
Yes.
Yep.
Jesus told him it's not a cult, Beth.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm sorry, I was wrong.
Yeah, and what's happening, although it's solidifying again, is that you have the Catholics who have their agenda. You have the Mormons who have their agenda. You have the evangelical Christians, and I'm still talking the ultra-right, the nutjobs. I call them the Reich. They all have different agendas. So if they were to gain power, who's going to run it? Because...
Yeah.
And they can't even agree with their own denominations.
No, they never think that far ahead.
Yeah, they'll stab each other in the back as soon as they get power. But yeah, they're like, this coalition is useful right now. And it's like that whole strategy of enemy of my enemy is my friend for now, is their whole thing. And then eventually they'll stab each other in the back and, you know, hopefully we don't get that far.
When somebody wants to say there's 2.whatever billion Christians in the world, but a Southern Baptist is going to tell you that 2.whatever billion of them aren't real Christians because they're not Southern Baptist. And the Catholics are all going to tell you that the other billion and a half aren't real Christians because they're not Catholics. And Mormons, you know, they're not really Christians. And Pentecostals aren't really Christians because they talk in tongues and that's from Satan. And it all dissolves when you get down to sex, not sex, sex, you know, bleh, I hate that word, but
denominations,
sectarianism, damn it.
Sexual denominations, sex churches, basically.
That sounds more fun.
I think that could be much more entertaining.
It says here, under an article I was reading on Dominionism here recently, it says, in the late 1980s, sociologist Sarah Diamond began writing about the intersection of Dominion theology with the political activists of the Christian right. Diamond argued that the primary importance of the Christian Reconstructionist ideology is its role as a catalyst for what is loosely called Dominion theology. And the thing that really pops out to me is when this was written. If this is when Dominionism started to become apparent in sociology, I'm wondering that this kind of timed out right around the same time as the Satanic Panic. Could this be like in some way a response to?
It's all connected. Dominionist movement as we know it today actually began in 1980-81.
Oh, I would say before that. Well, I would actually say towards the New Deal, because you do see opposition and this tying to like these right-wing values to Christianity explicit ways as a pushback to FDR's reforms. Oh. And then the 1980s,
they're fighting socialism.
Yes.
And what it is, though, it became more coalesced in the 80s with Francis Schaeffer when he wrote the Christian Manifesto. He's actually one of the, quote, founders of this whole shebang. But that's when we had the late 70s, early 80s, we had the Moral Majority, the Pat Robertson, the old farts that we all wish would pass away. Because, I've been dealing with Pat Robertson since 1978.
Ugh.
Okay? I actually heard him speak at my college in 1983.
The guy is, I swear somebody has, used voodoo and just turned him into a zombie, and he's just, some reanimated corpse that just says stupid shit.
Yeah, he has horcruxes.
They actually, in the 80s, really solidified behind Schaeffer's Christian Manifesto, and that's when all these, Phyllis Schlafly's group, Eagle Forum, they came around. I mean, there's a couple of different, you could say, starting points, but yeah, Morgan's right, it does actually go back, way back. The first wave was right after the New Deal. Another wave came in 1955 to 1958. Gee, that's when the word homosexuality appeared in the Bible.
And the Red Scare.
They're all tied in. And then you have the Satanic Panic in the 80s with Jack Chick and Mike Warnke.
Wait. What do you mean the word homosexuality appeared in the Bible in the 1950s?
1955.
That's when they first started to interpret the certain verses to mean homosexuality and change translations to actually put the word in there.
Are you talking interpreting parts of the Old Testament like Sodom and Gomorrah? Or are you talking more like the Pauline epistles? Or all the above?
All the above, but primarily it was the reinterpretation of Sodom and Gomorrah's story to mean homosexuality. Also the reinterpretation, but the bringing forth of the interpretation of the Levitical passage to mean homosexuality. If you take all the Bibles, and I actually do have all the Bibles, going all the way back to the Latin Vulgate, if you trace the history of certain words like abomination, man should not lie with man in the Levitical passages, or if you want to take it to the New Testament with the interpretation of the Pauline, Arsenicoit, and Melkoit, you will see how the translation of those words changed. Mostly, pre-1955, it meant effeminate or soft. 1955, when the Red Scare began, that's when homosexual, the word, first appeared in the Bible. That's when the reinterpretation of Sodom and Gomorrah happened. It's when the reinterpretation of those, you know, Levitical passages happened. Prior to that, it was not a thing.
What purpose would they have to become anti-gay in relation to the Red Scare?
Didn't you know all lesbians and gay people are communists?
Because they're okay. different. And because, yeah, because it's not just a religious bigotry that's against LGBTQ people. I mean, if you look at a lot of what's happening sort of with this, you know, people more towards the right and even the alt-right who are also atheists, you know, it's that bigotry angle that always can coalesce people and form
us versus them.
Yeah, just picking out some minority or some kind of group that we might not like and saying, hey, that thing I want you to hate, that group you don't like or that group that you think is weird, they're part of the thing I want you to hate.
Exactly. And you can easily lie about them because they probably in the 1950s, you know, it's like you didn't see a lot of people that were out and living as, you know, gay couples or anything of that nature. It wasn't very common. So, you know, it was easy to demonize them and be like, oh, well, this is what my pastor said about gay people. So he must be right.
And it's very politically motivated, but it's like Dove said, it's the us versus them. And going back into the whole Seven Mountains Band-Aid with the controlling of arts and entertainment, if you look at one of the ways they do this is the whole Noah movies and the Nephilim movies. That's how the Genesis 6-4 giants are being reinterpreted by some, not all. As, ooh, you know, Nephilim spirit, the spiritual warfare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they're reinterpreting the whole Nephilim issue. And it's giving them a justification to ostracize or to demonize or to kill
whoever.
And it doesn't, and it's not just LGBT, but we seem to be the primary target. Although it's now transferring to people of color, too.
The thing that always I thought was really interesting is whenever I speak to a Christian apologist or someone promoting Judeo-Christian, also something that emerged right out of the 1950s, right, that Judeo-Christian kind of philosophy, is they'll say, hey, look, we've got the Dead Sea Scrolls that prove the Pentateuch, that prove the beginning parts of the Old Testament. And I always think, like, well, what about Enoch? And a lot of people think with Dead Sea Scrolls that, like, it was like they had one Genesis, they had, you know, one Exodus. They had a bunch of scrolls and a whole bunch of this one, a whole bunch of that one. And if they had a lot of a certain book, then, okay, you could say that that adds some legitimacy to the accuracy of the story. If you passed on the story over here verbally, and then also had many, many years later, you find that it's been written pretty accurately, that's cool. But they leave out Enoch, and there were just as many scrolls of Enoch. And Enoch talked about the Nephilim and how a bunch of angels were coming down and screwing animals and stuff. And I always thought, like, that was, like, the coolest book of all.
You talk to most Christians, and they will not consider it as Christian scripture. Until they start talking about the Nephilim. Then it's the best thing since fucking sliced bread.
Yeah, they'll bring it up a little bit.
And the thing is with the Dead Sea Scrolls, and this kind of ties in, is that all the Dead Sea Scrolls prove is that there was consistency in the stories. It does not prove anything else. It does not prove God is.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make it true, but I mean, it was a pretty awesome find.
It just means that their oral history was pretty accurate, and when they wrote it down, you know, they stayed true to those stories. They didn't, you know,
they weren't altered as badly as they could have been. They played a decent game of telephone. Basically.
Yeah, and that again was one of the reasons I was taught in this Christian worldview class, like, oh, well, this is why the Bible is true, because it's so accurate and they considered it so important to get it right, and it hasn't changed from then, so you can't say it's a misinterpretation of, you know, the original whatever. And it's just, yeah, it's complete nonsense. And also, even the New Testament, like, there's a good bit of biblical scholars who believe that a lot of Paul's letters were not written by Paul. They're forgeries.
Exactly.
Because that's why they're so different in style. And because you can tell, like, particularly when people are writing letters, you know, and as somebody who studied history and who studied evidence and law, there's a certain style that people have when they write. And
absolutely.
And it even comes across sort of in the English translation. And I'm sure it really, really comes across, you know, in the Greek writings. It's interesting if you think about how much of it people are like, oh, yeah, it's a sacred book, but it's really picked and chosen and really based on kind of nothing. And I mean, half of a New Testament that might very well be all forgeries.
Yeah. I remember when I first started debating people online, and I came across this fundamentalist twit who, he used to throw the Dead Sea Scrolls out and be like, this proves the Bible is perfect and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, it proves that a lot of people changed a lot of stuff when it suited their fancy is what that proves.
You have to remember, too, with the Old Testament canon was pretty much set by the time of Christ. So,
yeah.
But the New Testament canon was not set until, about 525 AD, about 500 years after Christ existed.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why do we accept the Bible but not Greek mythology?
Well, also some books were thrown out, too. Like, if you look at these other scriptures and things, and people were like, oh, this is like the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, or oh, this is the Gospel of this guy. Or
Peter. Gospel of Peter had, whenever they pulled the stone back, the cross itself came out. The actual cross, they put that in the tomb with Jesus, and they're like, hey, Jesus is gone, what happened? And then the cross kind of like hops out of there, you know, like all like a cartoony thing. And starts talking to people.
Pop cans.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, they should have just put bunny ears on that thing and had it hopping around with a basket.
Yeah, they could have tied it all together.
It's very similar deal with Islam, too, because they always go around claiming that the Quran is unaltered and it's perfect and blah, blah, blah. And then I looked into it and found out, no, it's as messed up as the Bible. In fact, possibly even worse because of the way that the Quran was put together in the first place.
Can I pick your brain on that a little bit? Because I often hear from Muslim apologists that the Quran does a lot better job of being scientific than the Bible does.
No. Oh, hell no.
even a little?
No, not even close. Okay. So one of the big ones that Muslims like to throw out is the notion that the Quran correctly identifies the stages of embryonic growth, which is utter bullshit. For starters, now I've only read about 52 chapters out of 114 in the Quran. Now, some of them are really tiny, like chapter one is like seven ayats or verses, whatever. They're tiny. Some of them are 250 verses, so it depends. But I've read several, even in the 52 that I've read, we have life was created from a blood clot. Life was created from clay. Life was created from water. There was a couple other ones in there, too, that I don't recall off the top of my head. But the big one, they're saying, oh, well, blood clot. Well, if somebody 1,400 years ago looked at an embryo, they would think it was a blood clot. Well, no, not really. And then they talk about different layers. And so they're saying, oh, well, those are like the actual layers of like, you know, the mother's skin and the wall of the uterus and this and that. And it's the exact right number. Well, and a bunch of other stuff. And the thing is, if you look into it, what has happened here is that either Muhammad or some of his companions who had traveled and would have come into contact with other learned people plagiarized people like Hippocrates and Aristotle and the early physicians, the Greek physicians. And I forget which one it is, but one of them actually wrote something very similar about the stages of embryonic growth. And there are some glaring errors in that initial description that makes sense from somebody of that era who didn't understand medicine the way that we do. And those same errors are repeated in the Quran. So it's not, because the point that the Muslims are trying to make is no one knew this information during the time of Muhammad. Well, that's not true. It had been around for almost 1,000 years before that. Lots of people had written about it. Obviously, somebody, either Muhammad or somebody that he talked to, had come across this information. Maybe they even had a copy of it. Who knows? And imparted this information to Muhammad. And he went, ooh, well, nobody around here knows that shit. I'm going to throw that in my holy book. There's also the idea that the earth is a sphere or is round. But actually, there are more verses in the Quran that describe the earth as being flat than the one verse that, depending on how you interpret the word used in the original Arabic, may or may not mean spherical or like an egg.
What was the one about the water? Like the salinity of water is separates it or something like that?
Well, no. What they claim is that salt water and fresh water do not mix. And they will post a photo of, I think it's a tidal eddy or something, where you can see a line in the water.
I've seen Christians post that too and be like, isn't God amazing?
It's like, no, it's an eddy, you dumbass. Like, go on NOAA.gov and they actually have a page that explains exactly that. Like, it takes you literally 5 seconds of Googling to see that that is not true.
I think that gives you a good, like, look at what we try to attack on Beyond the Trailer Park, is that all of our interests are similar, obviously, because we're all atheists, but we get into these really wild things, and it's what makes, like, discussions difficult, like, you know, in a time period, because Deb and Morgan and I, we could just go on for hours about the shit we've been...
Oh, yeah.
I'm more for the homosexuality issues, because obviously I'm gay, so I've been studying that.
I thought so.
Yeah, for 35 years, I've been...
I knew it!
Yeah. Surprise gay!
But, you know, I love how, like, you clearly do this often, you know, because you brought the whole thing full circle. Like, we started off talking about the podcast Beyond the Trailer Park, and then we kind of got into Dominionism and all over somehow Mike Pence and then about the Quran, and it just kind of bounced all over the place. And then you bring it right back to the show. Can you guys, just before I lose you, can you tell the listeners how they can find the show, and maybe if they wanted to talk to you guys, how they might get a hold of you?
Yeah, so you can find us on Beyond the Trailer Park. I believe all our shows are still on YouTube. Yep. We broadcast live on YouTube and Spreaker at 6:30 p.m. Central, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can also join the chat. So we do get a few trolls over there, particularly in the YouTube chat. That seems to be where most of the conversations tends to happen. So, yeah, come hang out in the YouTube chat. Maybe you'll get to face off a few trolls if there is. And if not, there's some great discussion happening there. And I love to interact with people as they're in the chat. That's one of the benefits, I think, about having a live show, is you get to see your listener feedback sort of in real time. And, you know, if people have questions or if they have commentary or, you know, points they want to bring up, then we can bring it up right then and there and include that in the episode.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, you can also find me. I really like that. That was one of the parts I really liked when previously, because they actually stole me from No Religion Required.
We did.
after they fired Bobby C., fired all the millennials, which was me and Jeremiah, and I actually took Miss Ashley's job because she couldn't do a show anymore, so it's kind of funny how it goes full circle.
Yeah.
And I did like doing a live show because, yeah, it's just fun. But yeah, you can also catch Beyond the Trailer Park on Spreaker, Stitcher, I believe, and on iTunes.
Yes.
iTunes for sure. And then I do another podcast called The Bi-Skeptical, and I record that with Tris Mamone. And that's on iTunes, Spreaker, and Stitcher. You can also like The Bi-Skeptical on Facebook, follow it on Twitter, and then we have a Bi-Skeptical fan page as well. You can also find me on Twitter and Instagram. That's Mostring, MOSTRING, and on Facebook at Morgan L. Stringer.
And we have a Facebook page for Beyond the Trailer Park. We have, like, a discussion group. We have beyondthetrailerpark.com. I do a little thing called Full Quranic where I read the Quran so you don't have to. Trust me, you don't want to read that shit.
At least not the version you're reading.
Oh, lordy.
And to close it out, the easiest way to find me is on Twitter, Dune998. That connects to my Facebook, which is under Beth A. Hambridge. And I also have a blog on Blogger called Havoc and Chaos. And currently I'm working on a series, and it's going to be a really long one, on Julian Epperly of the Poop Cult.
We did an episode on that 2-3 weeks ago now, so.
That shit sounds cool.
Well, yeah, if you call peeing out your ass cool.
Yeah, dying of a salt-induced stroke, yay.
As long as you're keeping it loose. But ladies, thank you so much for
Don't go chasing
us
waterfalls,
today.
Dude.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, go, was that TLC? Because, you know, I don't want no scrubs. Thank you to our guests for taking us beyond the trailer park. Thank you also to Dave Blair at davefreesong.com/freemusic. Thank you to our patrons. You too can support us at patreon.com/right. And learn more at therighttoreason.com. Next week, we're going to be doing something that I'm not particularly in favor of. It's a debate, and you know I like debates, but this one's not the long-form conversation that I prefer. Its format is of a more classical scheme, an Oxford-style debate between yours truly and Chris Christensen, moderated by Kevin Francis from Left at the Valley podcast. Here's the topic: do Christians have the right to reason? We'll find out if they do next week. Between now and then, remember that you have the right to reason.
We ran out already. I was going to tell you all about the presuppositionalist Hare Krishna I ran into today.
Oh.
Those are still around?
Yeah. it was on one of the Facebook debate groups today.
Oh, crazy group.
And you ran into a real Hare Krishna.
Oh, I've seen many of those before, but this is a presupper.
So what does that mean?
He eats before dinner.
Yeah. He, are you familiar with Matt Slick and William Lane Craig and those guys?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the ones that are like, you can't use logic because logic comes from God, and we know there's God because of logic and blah, blah. Yeah, he's like that, but he's a Hare Krishna.
Like the Psi 10 Brugenkate kind of
thing. Yeah, Psi 10.
They presuppose the existence of God and then try to force you into agreeing with that presupposition that God already exists. And then they try to prove that God exists using the presupposition that God exists.
Yes.
Very lazy logic.
But how do you do that with Hare Krishna?
Well, you just substitute the Bible God with the Krishna.
It's kind of like...
Sounds like you're burnt.
Yes.
It's kind of like the Hydro Prophet that Deb and I ran
into. Yes, it does.
Yes, the Hydro Prophet.
So, my handle, if you've noticed... Skype is Dune998, and yes, it is in reference to the book and series Dune by Frank Herbert.
I think you mean the film.
No, it's a six. Well, actually. Well, okay, if you want to get snarky, which one of the four?
Ooh. Yeah, I only know of the one, so.
Yeah, there's.
Which I thought it was cool, but like riding spice worms through the desert, like, I don't know. Just some of that stuff, I was like, I just can't go there.
But what I started to do is quote passages. Dune, like I understood where he was coming from, and he's like, yeah, I'm like, dude, I just quoted fucking Dune to you.
That's hilarious.
So Hydro Prophet, this guy literally said that water is God, and that he was a Hydro Prophet.
I should start doing that in my debates, like start quoting Lord of the Rings, or just something.
Start speaking in Elvish.